You're listening to Bush Telegraph on ABC Radio National. Michael McKenzie with you. You may remember last week we had a long and very interesting discussion about the benefits and perhaps some of the pitfalls of eating raw food. Dr. Janet Patterson got in touch after that segment, labelling it, and I quote, superficially attractive. But she reminds us cooking is sometimes necessary. Raw plant food can contain toxins at dangerous concentrations, as well as the microorganisms considered in the broadcast. In the raw state, Janet writes, legumes contain toxic substances, and she's listed quite a few that actually don't roll off my tongue very easily. So we've just said they're toxic. She also says these substances are generally eliminated by soaking and subsequently discarding the liquid and or by heat treatment at relatively elevated temperatures. Kidney beans and black beans, and to a lesser extent white kidney beans, broad beans and lima beans, contain a toxic protein which is denatured and made non-toxic by appropriate cooking, but not by soaking. Eating just 4 or 5 raw or insufficiently cooked kidney beans can kill a child or can make an adult extremely ill, Janet writes. Janet is a lecturer in food toxicology, and she asks us to please warn your listeners not to eat uncooked legumes apart from the common green pea, the snow pea, or the green bean. Janet, thank you. I think we've been warned. In this week's Food on Friday, after last week's fascinating expose on raw foods and the introduction into the diets of Australians, having already taken off in restaurants and kitchens around the US, today we're going to talk about meat. We haven't talked about beef particularly for some time. And in this case, we're talking about a breed of cow that doesn't hail from Australia in any historical sense, but is incredible to see on the landscape because it is blindingly white. It actually hails from Italy, and one of the purveyors of what is called the Chianina breed is with me now. Daniela Mollica is one of the co-founders of the Isola Farm in Gippsland in Victoria. Daniela, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
The Chianina breed of cow, Where did you discover it?
I first came across the Chianina breed when I was in Italy, as probably many Australians have done. I came across it in two senses. One, I came across it on the plate when I was travelling through Florence,
right,
when I was in a restaurant in Florence called I Latini, and they served up bistecca alla fiorentina, the classic huge Florentine T-bone steak. And I was absolutely enamoured. It was divine. It was the most amazing piece of meat I think I'd ever eaten.
And what was so great about it?
Oh, the flavour. The flavour. It was incredible. I mean, apart from its impressive size, which is actually more of a feature just of the age of the animal and the age at which you tend to slaughter the Chianina animals, the Chianina beasts, it was the incredible flavour. It actually tasted different to any other meat I had previously eaten. And so I think that was the first time that I was absolutely blown away by a piece of meat. And then later on, I moved to Italy and I was living in Italy and I raced bikes. I was on a cycling team, and so I spent a lot of time riding my bike around the hills of Tuscany, and I came across these white cows, and so I met them in their second or in their original incarnation, as the beast.
In their first clothing.
Exactly, yeah. in their first suit. Yeah, so that's how I came across them in the first sense.
Now, it's fascinating, too, to hear your personal journey into how it is you now raise this breed of cattle on farm, because you've raced bikes, you've already told us that, in a place like Italy, but you were also trained as a chiropractor.
That's right, I'm a chiropractor,
yes. Yeah, so do you go into the paddock and manipulate the spines of these Chianina?
I tell you, if I saw them walking awkwardly, I might go and check the hips out or something.
But someone who's had that background, how did you then find yourself in fact, founding, I think, the slow food movement in Victoria and then moving into raising animals?
It's a bit of it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
There's an historical perspective because I come from an Italian family.
I'm
born in Australia, a very large Italian family who have been involved in food for a very long time. My grandfather had mokopan coffee and my mother's a dimatina, and so they are involved in coffee and have been for many, many years. My father had a restaurant in Lygon Street, Il Gambero, And so from a very, very young age, I was in the restaurant in Il Gambero making coffees and helping, and I thought it was fantastic. However, when I said to my father, I want to be a chef when I was growing up, he said, no, don't be stupid. You'll be going to university, as many post-war migrants said.
I've made this kind of money, this kind of empire for myself so that my children can have a better education.
Exactly. Right. I've made the sacrifices in my life. I've worked since I was 12 or 13 years of age. I've done this so that you don't have to. Mm. And I think for a lot of post-war migrants, they saw that as the opportunity for their children that they were able to provide. And so consequently, my dad said, yep, no, you'll go to university. So I studied chiropractic and had a career as a chiropractor. I still work as a chiropractor.
Oh, you still do?
I do, a little bit, part-time. Uh-huh. Yes, unfortunately, money in farming is a little bit hard to come by. So yes, we
talk about that a lot on the show.
So, a lot of farmers have off-farm incomes, and we are also the same. So, yes, I do still work a little bit as a chiropractor.
And how did you get involved in the slow food movement?
At the time, in 1996, I was going out with a guy called James Broadway, and he was involved in wine. And he went over to Italy, and we came across the slow food movement in Italy, and they were interested in expanding into Australia. And so we thought the philosophy was sound and valid, and so that is how we came to start the slow food movement in Australia.
Just explain to people what it means.
The slow food movement was begun about 25 years ago in Italy as a response to the opening of a McDonald's in Piazza del Spagna in Rome. And a group of young Italians said, this is crazy, we have an amazing food culture here, why are we permitting this fast food American business into our country? Yep. And they successfully picketed the site, and whilst they didn't stop it from opening, they did delay the opening. And out of that original stand, as an assault to the word fast food, they started the slow food movement. It has grown and morphed over the years, and now it stands for, philosophically, it stands for good, clean and fair. So good food produced in a clean manner, paying a fair price.
Now, when it comes to what you do now, which is raising Chianina, that seems to tick a lot of those boxes, which we'll talk about in more detail in a moment.
Very much so.
But is raising meat on land sustainable? You've talked about some of the other aspects of slow food. How do you justify, as someone who obviously cares deeply about how food is made and also the environment it's made in, how do you reconcile that with yourself when you're growing cattle?
It is sustainable, mm-hmm, if you do it in a certain way. I think we need to look at the fact that we live in a very rich society. We are able to put meat onto the table every night of the week, given a fairly low wage. We can take that as an assumption. Meat in this country is not seen as an exclusive product in any way, but we only need to go back a few generations to find that it was. If we want to consume meat in an ethical manner, we need to look, obviously, at the amount of meat in our diets. Yes. If someone wants to eat meat three times a day and they want that meat to be unbelievably cheap, then no, we are forced into production methods that are, in my opinion, unsustainable. Or perhaps they're sustainable for a period of time, but the degradation of the land that accompanies that is something that will eventually have long-term repercussions.
And in fact, that eating regime you just outlined, unfortunately, is in some cases the diet of Americans, which is why we see such an industrialised food production system in that country.
Very much so. And I think we're very lucky in Australia because we are following the Americans in many ways, and I see that as very unfortunate. We haven't gone too far yet. We're definitely at a point where we can stop, look at our production and look elsewhere and look to be a little bit more sustainable. You can grow beef sustainably. You don't have to overload your farm. You have to be careful in the areas that you run your cattle. There are certain parts of Australia that are much more prone to degradation. And so obviously, yes, running huge amount of hoofed animals, be they cattle or otherwise, are obviously going to play havoc with that land. So we need to be selective about the land that we grow cattle on. Mm-hmm. We need to look at the amounts of cattle that we run on the given size of the properties. And then obviously that does run through then into the consumer. We need to respect the entire animal once it's killed. We can't sit on our thrones and say, well, I'm only going to eat steak. If this poor animal has taken up space on this land, consumed the grass, consumed whatever it is that we've fed the animal,
and
I would argue
as well.
The water as well, but also I would argue that we should be only feeding them grass and not necessarily grain. I don't think we should be feeding them diets to which they are not accustomed, to which they are not naturally adapted. Consuming the water. If we're going to then only eat the steaks and send the rest of this meat off to mince or be sent into animal feed, then in my opinion we're doing a disservice and we're creating an unsustainable cycle. If we eat the entire animal, we appreciate the steak that we might eat once a month, and we look at the secondary cuts that we might eat two or three times a week, and we don't have meat three times a day, then yes, I do believe that farming beef in this country is sustainable.
My guest is Daniela Mollica, and she is talking here about her approach to farming, in this case, beef. I want to get back to another point you made, which is that if we're going to be sustainable, we have to eat, and I'm summarising here, nose to tail.
Yes.
And what you're talking about there isn't just a contemporary philosophy. That's an Italian philosophy, isn't it?
It's an old-time philosophy.
Yes.
And I think it's old-time across the board, but Italians are well noted for it, yes.
So when it comes to how you process your beasts for sale, are you adopting that? Are you actually looking at everything from nose to tail and trying to market all that?
We do. We sell our beef to restaurants, but we also sell, and probably a larger part of our business is actually selling direct to consumers. So people contact me and they say, Daniela, I'd like to buy some of your Isola Chianina. And I go, yep, no worries. Take their information. And when we have enough interest that warrants an animal to be sent to slaughter, we send the animal to slaughter. It's killed. It's then hung. What I then do is go down to a little local butcher in South Gippsland and we divide the animal up. We break it all off into its constituent parts and we make up 10-kilo boxes. Into each 10-kilo box goes some primals, some steaks, and also some secondaries. So you don't get a choice of what comes in your box. All I will guarantee is that you get the same percentage of primals to secondaries. There won't be a box that's all steaks and there won't be a box that's all mince. You will get a mixture of the entire animal and essentially you buy the same equitable division of meat that everyone else gets. So you get an honest breakdown of the cow.
This is socialist butchery.
It is. So I respect the entire animal. And if someone says, I just want to buy steaks, I say, yep, that's great, but that's not what we do. I'm not going to tell anyone else what their philosophy needs to be, but if you're interested in buying our meat, that is our philosophy and that's how we do it.
So if I open up my 10-kilo box of your Chianina, what are some of the other cuts I can expect to see?
You get a couple of T-bones and you get a ribeye and you'll get some rump and they'll all be pretty classic.
Yeah.
Then what we do is we'll take some of it, we'll take the top side and we'll cut it thin as schnitzels. So you'll have some meat in there that'll be suitable for schnitzels. You'll get some short ribs, which people can often find quite confronting. You might get some skirt steak.
Why is it confronting, short ribs?
A lot of people have never cooked beef short ribs. A lot of people open and go, what am I going to do with a bit of rib?
And what's your suggestion? What do you suggest?
Well, this is interesting because what happens when people initially used to get these boxes, I'd get all these emails back and they're like, what am I going to do with this? What am I going to do with that? And I'd go, fantastic, you got ossobuco, for example.
Yeah.
And I'd send out my ossobuco recipe. And they would say, oh, now I've got short ribs this month in my box. What am I going to do with short ribs? And I'd send them out a recipe. And someone else would go, I hate diced beef. What am I going to do with diced beef? And I'd go, but this diced beef's a little bit different because it's actually dry-aged diced beef. So rather than just being, something that's been the cheap, nasty cut off some poor animal that's been, has only had a 12-month lifespan, our older animals, so they've developed more flavour. Then they've also been dry-aged, develops more flavour. They're grass-fed, more flavour. And so consequently, your diced beef's actually quite delicious. Why don't you try this with it?
How would you cook diced beef?
Well, what you've got, the braise that you've got in your little bowl sitting right there in front of you, is probably one of my favourite wintry dishes. And so that's a beef and fennel braise.
Well, I just so happen to have a lovely stew from this diced beef that Daniela has brought in for us that she's prepared earlier. And can I taste now? Is that all right?
You may indeed.
As I slurp, can you take us through what you've put into this?
No worries. This is a classic winter braise. And when I say it's a classic winter braise, it marries together flavours of winter. So we're looking at what sort of vegetables are we able to buy in season in winter. And so this is a very simple braise, very simple stew casserole type dish where we start off with onions, fennel, celery and a little bit of just pancetta, or if someone prefer bacon. And we lightly fry that off. Into that, then we brown off some diced beef. In this instance, in this particular one, you've got a little bit of mixture of oyster blade and a little bit of chuck steak and a little bit of round.
And so, the flavour, it's so intense. Mm. It really is.
And that's got no salt at it, just for your own interest.
Because the pancetta is going to help with that.
The only saltiness is the pancetta.
Yeah. So if you're wondering and busily trying to take notes while Daniela's telling what's going on, it's okay. She's going to give me the recipe and we'll put it up on the website. So fear not. It's all right. So this would be a perfect winter stew.
I
need to ask you, as a Chianina producer, how many others like you are there around Australia?
How many other Chianina producers?
Yes.
Very few, unfortunately. People actually doing Chianina for the meat, I think there's only In fact, I don't actually even know of another person doing it. No, I think there's a lady, I've heard of a lady on the grapevine in New South Wales who has a Kianina herd that she will, that she's building up, that she will be using for meat. But no, there are other people who are philosophically doing what we do, but with other breeds. So people doing, you know, grass-fed, beautifully treated animals, etc. Oh, are you enjoying that?
Oh, I'm so enjoying this.
Perfect.
You have to keep talking while I swallow.
That's okay. So there are other people philosophically doing what we're doing. One of the things that make Kianina a more flavoursome breed of beef is they're very slow growing. But because they're slow growing, when you put them on the farm, they need to be about 2 years old before you can even think of slaughtering them.
Right.
And so
compared to other cattle breeds?
Yeah, 12 months.
12 months. So it's double the time.
It's double the time. Which makes it a less economically viable breed for people if you're only going to look at the bottom line. I would then argue that what that has done is made us become a little bit more creative in the way we sell it, hence the home packs, cut out the middleman, keep the price fair and deliver straight to people's homes.
And what I think is extraordinary about your philosophy as well, Daniela, is that you wait for critical mass, for demand on a beast before you take it to slaughter. It's not That's like right. you've got it all frozen ready to roll.
We deliver fresh meat. We don't send frozen meat.
Let me ask you this, because we're so often we talk to people, boutique producers, if you like yourself, who are doing things in a different way than the other methods of mass production in our food chains. Yeah. And it's so often I go, what can we learn from this that we can adopt nationally, and what can only exist because you have this rarefied situation? Is there things we can do?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Oh, definitely. Look, personally, we have Kianina. That's fine. That's what we do.
Right.
And I believe that the Kianina breed does contribute to the amazing flavour that is in that bowl right there, without a doubt.
And I get that. I think that's fabulous. We need people like you in our industry to remind us of what's possible and what we shouldn't accept when it comes to other forms of food. However, what I'm saying to you is, in sheer practicalities, if I'm a struggling family trying to put meals on my table for my children, am I ever going to be able to afford Kianina?
Yes. Yes, most definitely. You could probably get them cheaper if you went to a supermarket. That I'm not going to enter into that debate, because I believe that supermarkets have certain practices that are actually damaging to farmers, and they're actually, in fact, if we look at the slow food principles, good, clean and fair, they're not paying a fair price. But if you were to go to a butcher and look at other comparative meats, that's approximately, if I look at a family of four, that's probably 10 meals in that box. So you're looking at $17.50 for your protein component of a meal. That's affordable. This is not, and that's part of the reason why I sell direct, because if I were to use someone as a middleman, then no, the price blows out. But the way I do it, using the entire animal, using a small butcher, and then using a small local courier, we can keep the price at a point where families can actually use it and buy the meat, get 10 kilos of it, use some of it fresh immediately, put some of it into stews, and then maybe freeze the stews, as a lot of us mothers do on a Sunday for dinners during the week, and then freeze other bits of it and bring it out in the next 2 weeks. We tend to do a kill about once a month, because we wait for that critical mass. I don't kill animals for no reason. I won't kill animals just to have meat frozen. So I do wait for a critical mass. I send out an email to my little database and say, is anyone interested? Wait till the numbers, fill the orders, take the addresses and send it out.
And are you making a living from this?
Not yet, no. No, we're not. We're not. I would be lying to say that we were. But we are generating a greater income doing it that way than what we would if we just sent the animal to the sale yard.
And also you're providing, in the case of your local butcher, a source of employment, a source of resources.
Yep, and to a local courier, and we use a local abattoir.
And how many locals are taking advantage of the meat?
More Melburnians are taking advantage of it. I think that's just the fact, because I think that's just because people in the country tend to have access to their own animals anyway.
Right.
So you'll always get less people in the country looking at it, because most of them are just popping off a cow or a sheep here and there and eating it themselves.
Yeah, but we won't talk about that too much, you know.
Well, but you can do that. You're allowed to do it so long as it's for personal consumption. The minute you want to sell your product, though, no, you then need to abide by PrimeSafe, which we do. So we have our animals killed in an abattoir. So we minimise the amount of miles that our animals travel. It's a very linear situation. They leave our farm, they go to the abattoir, they go to the butcher, the courier picks them up, they come to Melbourne. He does one drop. He devises a circular route, so he tries to do as little backtracking. So I try to be very aware of food miles in that sense.
And you sleep well at night too, don't you?
I do. And do you know what else? People go, oh, but you can't do it. You can't eat ethically. You can't eat locally. You can't. It's impossible. I'm time poor. And I go, you can. And here's one way of doing it. It's not the best, and I'm improving all the time, and we're not without fault by any means. It's very hard to tick every box, you know. Just when you think you've ticked, I don't know, you've ticked local, someone goes, oh, but you use petroleum to ship. And I go, oh, all right, we do. You know, we do. We use petrol, okay. We're not perfect, but we try, and there are other people out there doing that. So your question of can it be done on a larger scale, yes, it can. But it needs to be done by lots of little local farmers. It's not about us sending our meat to New South Wales. It's about people in Sydney finding someone in country in rural New South Wales who's doing a similar thing to what we are.
The provenance.
That's the provenance. That's how it will work. And people in Brisbane saying, right, I need to find a farmer in Roma who's doing the same thing. That's how it can work, in my opinion.
Daniela, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for coming in.
You're very, very welcome, Michael.
Daniela Molliker, who along with her husband raises Kianina cattle for both restaurants and us, the consumer. Their farm, Isola, is in Victoria's Gippsland region, and I'll put Daniela's recipe for her Kianina beef and fennel braise, just delicious, up online this afternoon at our website, abc.net.au/rn/bushtelegraph.